Hello, and welcome to this segment of Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and my guest today is a returning guest. He was on May of last year. It is Louis Tempirio, director of the Klein Esopus Museum in Ulster Park. Like I said, he was on last year to talk about the museum, and today he'll be speaking about the general history of the Hudson Valley, people, diversity, industry, and so forth, and its impact on the nation. So, welcome again, Louis. Nice to have you back.
It's good to be back. Thank you for the invite.
Okay. So now, where would you like to begin? Because it's pretty general.
let's begin with the general area.
Okay.
What makes this area the gem of our nation? And that's what I call it. I call it the gem of our nation with the many facets. And the museum that I represent is an old, it used to be an old church, a Dutch Reformed church. It was built in 1827. And it was going to be demolished from lack of whatever. It was going to be demolished, and a group of locals got together and said, hey, this is a historic monument, and it's now a historic monument, documented, placarded, the whole thing. And we are also a state of New York chartered education center. Mm-hmm. Because for some of the ones that do homeschooling and that sort of thing, they come there and they can get credit. I go out and I speak on behalf of the museum and as a town historian about the history of the town and give the local folks that history. But now what we're going to talk about is what makes it the gem of our nation. And there's four things that make it a gem. Number one, geology. Number two, geography. Number three, the diversity and the transportation, the waterways, key to making it what it is. You have to go back to the original 1609. Henry Hudson comes up looking for the West India Company, working for the West Indies, looking for a Northwest Passage, comes up the Hudson River, and is wowed by the mouth of the roundout where it comes out right in Kingston, just below Kingston, yes. Actually between Kingston and Port Ewan. And it comes out there, and what he found was the indigenous people that were there, both the Lenape and the Muncie Indians. And they were settled in that valley, by the way. And the valley became the central point, a hub of even the Indian nation. And just as a side note, most people would say, you know, where did the term Indian come from? Well, it became when they looked for the people, they saw they were looking for India, so they thought the indigenous people were Indians. Ah. Were India Indians.
Right.
So now the bottom line is that's untrue. That's a myth.
That's right.
Now, the reality is that when Henry Hudson came, either he or his first mate, when he got to the mouth of the roundout at Kingston Point, which is now Kingston Point, he wrote down that these people were very friendly. They were people of the earth. They were Homerets, which means people of the dirt people. And he said, it written in his logbook, either he or his first mate, we don't know who did, wrote that they were indios, of God. And that's where the term Indian came from. Now, that's a little piece of history that nobody knows, it's in the book.
I love that. See, I know I was a misnomer. Native American is a more politically correct term, but that's why they were called Indians in the first place.
Right. So it's not a slur. It's actually a significant valued term. That these were people. They weren't the savages that they were, supposedly made out to be. These were very industrious people. They were people of the earth that farmed, that fished, that made. And the reason they stayed at the mouth of the this area, and that became the central hub both of the indigenous people nations and our own nation became a hub. Why? Because of the geology, the geography, the waterways. And so when I say that, what does that mean? Well, go back to 1609 when he came up here. Came up in a sailing ship. Now, could you imagine the indigenous people never having seen this huge ship coming up the Hudson? And then they see these people that were totally different, and they were very friendly. So, and they traded with them, and they did. It was very lucrative because everybody, it was a win-win. Mm-hmm. That was the key to it. It was a win-win because they actually traded the pelts and the food and the grain. And again, people of the earth, and they used, because this area was the mouth, at the mouth of the Hudson River. Now, the Indians called it the Mahantuck, which means the river that flows in two directions.
Right.
Okay, and so they would use that for transportation, because back in that time, there was only one way to get around, two actually. One, your feet,
yeah.
and animals, and the waterways. And they and that area down in Kingston, where the roundout comes out, there is the Sopus, there is the Walkill, there is Black Creek, Swartickel Creek, the Hudson River, and various other streams and creeks. And that's why the villagers, the people of the Indian nation, literally camped there. And that was their, and there's tons of artifacts. And we have one of the best in our museum. We have a collection of artifacts. Points, arrowheads, scrapers, awls, tools, grinders, and things that you wouldn't even imagine that they were making. Okay, so, and we have that. Even the pottery. Now, and again, I'm going to say pottery because the pottery was made with clay, mm-hmm. red clay, iron-rich clay, which is what the west side of the Hudson River is known for, the bricks.
Right, especially here in Catskill, right, shale bricks.
Right, the yeah. bricks, everything from Catskill all the way down to Garrison on the west side. Mm-hmm. Not so much the east side, but the west side was the iron-rich clay, which they made bricks. Now, here's a little tidbit. 98% of every brick in New York City came from this area, the Mid-Hudson Valley. 98%. Mm-hmm. That's billions of bricks.
Yeah,
would it be? Billions. So the interesting piece about that is that not only was that the geology formed the natural resources, but also the waters flooded and became very fertile. So it was a very fertile farming area. And they fished it. So the rivers was like the life to them. That was their life. And so, and it still was. Now, and as the industry started to going, there was the Industrial Revolution. Now we're going to fast forward to the, you know, early 18th, 19th century, mm-hmm. you know, in that area. And their fuel. And what did they have here? Timber. Lots of timber. Yeah. And so they use that for food. They use that for building. They use that for even for roads. Now, here's a little interesting thing that most people don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any place in the Hudson Valley that doesn't have a plank road. What they say, plank road. It's called plank road. South mm-hmm. plank road, north plank
right.
road. Whether
yeah.
whatever town you're in, they have plank roads.
Yeah, a lot.
What it was is that it used to be planks. They would cut the timbers and put planks because during the wet season, it would be, you know, with the horses and wagons, it would just be a mess.
Mud hole. Yeah.
Which brings you back to one of the main exports of this area. There was four exports. Brick, bluestone is one, ice. 400,000 tons on an average day, on an average year, between the Kingston Rhinecliff Bridge and the Highland Walkway down there, on the railway down there, mm-hmm. on an average. They would do it, and it had to come from the middle of the river, because where did all the waste go? In all the streams, they would go, and it would flow into the river. So that was the ice that was not used for drinking.
Ice.
That was called crystal ice, and that was in lakes, and that was more expensive to buy. And they would put it in tons and tons on barges to ship down to New York mm-hmm. and up to Albany because of the crystal lakes that were in this area. So that's the one thing that they had. Then they had the other export besides bricks and mortar. They had the hay. Now, why hay was a major export, Okay, I'm going to tell you why. Okay. I'm going to tell you why, because you know nobody guesses that. They talk about agriculture. They talk about the fruits and vegetables that would go down, but because they didn't have refrigeration, so they couldn't even export it to Europe because it would take months to go. And what happens to fruit when it and vegetables? They rot. Okay, that's it. Okay, so what would happen is that in their exporting down, they would put the sawdust, because there was a lot of mills, so they would put it in sawdust and hay, and the hay would not only insulate it, but also in New York City, there was 135,000 horses. What did they eat?
Hay.
Amen. Because the grains, I mean, they weren't fed on grains because, right. You know, people were going, that's, they ate that. That was mm-hmm. their livelihood. But they would have, it got so bad that the streets of New York used to smell because of the urine and because of the manure of the horses. So yeah. they would put planks on it, and later on they would do that, and they would shovel that up. And they would take this hay that would be going down, not only to feed the horses, but to bed it. And also they would take the manure and bring that back up on barges for fertilizer. So it was a cycle.
Yeah.
See, and most people don't realize that. They say, oh, hay, what are they doing with hay? The horses have to eat. Yeah. 135,000 horses at one point in time.
Yes.
And then that was the other one. The other one was what we know from Rosendale. When they were, because they were running out of wood, I mean, they had plenty of it, but during the Industrial Revolution, the steam, Clermont and the steam engines, they needed more fuel. Now, what's the best fuel for steam?
Coal.
Coal. Any coal in New York?
No.
Not much. Not to speak of, okay? Yeah. So what did they do? On the roundout, they built the D&H Canal, okay. 108 miles to Pennsylvania, which was the lion's share of the coal in this country from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And they would bring it by tons, thousands and thousands of tons of coal onto barges through the D&H Canal, down the roundout, down on being loaded from Island Dock, which is right under the Wirt Street Bridge, one of the oldest bridges in the area. Okay. And they would, and that was the connection. Remind me to speak about that, because that's an interesting thing, the Wirt Street Bridge.
Wirt Street Bridge, right.
And the connection between the Albany and New York, and how that was the main connection. But we'll just digress for a moment. We'll go back to the what they found. Digging the canal, they would take an order before finding hydraulic cement in when they were digging the canal. Mm-hmm. Now, they used to purchase it from Europe, the hydraulic cement, okay. But they found the cement that was in the Rosendale, the area of the Mid-Hudson Valley, including Cementon down there. Just down the road, right, on 9W. So they would take this, as they were digging the canal, they found this, like, dolomite that's silica, and it was very iron-rich, and it made a phenomenal cement. Hydraulic cement, okay, that actually hardened underwater. that's hydraulic cement. Okay. It literally hardens underwater, and the Romans used it. You know, back that's the aqueducts that are still. But the cement that was found in Rosendale in Ulster County area was some of the strongest cement in the world. They used it for the White House, the Capitol building. They used it for the Statue of Liberty, the base the blue stone. And all of the blue stone, by the way, that came from, that was the sidewalks in New York, came from the Ulster County and that area, blue stone. The hydraulic cement that was used for that, and the stone. So the area was very rich in that regard. And having that... lion's share of this natural resources, and then you get to the agriculture. You get to the fruits and the vegetables and the grain because of the floodplain, the Wallkill River. I don't know if you've ever seen the Wallkill River. Look at a map and you'll see the Wallkill River, where it goes all the way from Ellenville, all the way down, and it comes out to right at the mouth of the Hudson in at the roundout. They actually connect at the roundout. And then the Esopus that runs into that goes across, and it comes out to the Kingston area, the Kingston Lighthouse. That's the Esopus. And that's what's called the Groot Esopus. In Dutch, that is large. And then the Klein Esopus, which is the roundout, is small in the Dutch. So you have the Klein Esopus and the Groot Esopus.
And there's the name of the museum. Okay, Klein. Now I know.
Yes, so that's where we get that, because we're right there at the bay, right in the bay where the Hudson Meadows Lighthouse is. And that's where we're right off of that on 9W. We're right next to the old the Headless Horseman. Now, what most people don't know, that's the it's a attraction that's usually for Halloween and that kind of thing. But they have all kinds of things going on there. And Mike Juby, the owner of that, is a gentleman. He allows us to use, when we have our big strawberry festival, to park there during our that time, June. But we've since built a park next to us, so we have a lot of things there. And I would say anybody that wants to learn about the very eclectic history, this gem with the many facets, come visit us at the museum. Go to our website. You'll see some of the things we have. We've done a drone footage, and we have a movie that's about a documentary that we filmed about the whole town of Esopus, the original patent that encompassed everything from Newburgh all the way to Ellenville, all the way to the Shawanga Mountains, all the way up to Catskill. And all of that area was the original, including on the from the west side. That was all everything on the west side, including all the little towns like New Paltz, Rosendale, Woodstock, Tilson, Highland, Milton, Marlborough, New Paltz, Kingston, Saugerties, Glasgow, Malden. All of those things were part of the original patent, include on the west side of the Hudson, including Rhinebeck and Rhinecliffe. On the east side, were part of the original 1615 land patent. Okay, now, when this was by the Dutch, and it was claimed by the Dutch.
Right.
Now, in 1646 or 64, I always forget which one. I think it's I think it's 64. That the British came, and the British said, "We're going to take it," and they did without a fight. They took it, and they said, "We're going to give Rhinebeck and Rhinecliffe to the Duchess of York, the Duchess County on that side of the river." Okay, so you see the history, the connection, connecting the dots is very important. And now the site that we have right now, and then they broke it up into the Hardenberg patent, which is New Paltz and Gardner and many of those ones.
Yeah.
Okay, and then they have the Kingston, Saugerties, Glasgow, the most of Ulster County. Most of Ulster County, I could say this not tongue-in-cheek, was, in fact, the original patent.
Okay.
So, and then they split it all up, and then when the British came, they burned Kingston, which was the capital of New York State at the time.
Right.
Okay, they came, and there was a lot of history, socio-political history. In there, First Continental Congress, right next door, in the house that Mike Juby has at the Headless Horseman, was where they had the First Continental Congress. So, which is right next to the museum.
Yeah.
Which is right, and where Sojourner Truth went to the church that was the church that we had, the Dutch Reformed Church that we have now, the museum, and we have a whole thing on her right now. And many people, and the people, the diversity that came here. For example, one was this. I'm going to name some people. And John Burroughs.
Mm-hmm.
And John Burroughs had a lot of people that he knew, including Teddy Roosevelt, including Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, Nikola Tesla, Thomas Watson of IBM, Maxwell Firestone from Firestone. They would come to Slabsides, which is right down the road, which literally is in walking distance of our museum. And they would come to Slabsides. Mm-hmm. Now, also in 1904, when Teddy Roosevelt ran for president under the Bull Moose Party, okay, he ran against Alton Parker, who lived across the street from us. And that's where Alton Parker was one of the vice president, and he ran against Teddy Roosevelt. Now, Teddy Roosevelt was well known, but so was the reason they put Alton Parker up. He was the youngest Supreme Court judge ever, and still to this day, okay. Youngest Supreme Court, and he was the Court of Appeals. Now, back in that day, in 1904, the Court of Appeals was the highest court, the appellate court, was the highest court in New York State, and it was equivalent to the Supreme Court. And so he was the youngest one. He has many, many accolades, and so they ran him against them as a Democrat, so he lived there. People like Sojourner Truth, talk about, you know, a bad woman. That was, I don't want to use the word because I don't like saying that, but, you know, they talk about woman that, you know, she was a suffrage. She went to the Supreme Court, yeah, and won her freedom and her son's freedom, James, that was sold for $20. And yeah, and even though New York wasn't a slave state, there was what's called indentured slaves. Now, the indentured slaves were people like people that work for IBM, for example. they work for somebody that, yeah, they're really an indentured slave.
Gotcha.
And so whatever, if you're going to work for somebody, there were ones that were slaves, and you could you bought them at that point in time, and you fed them, and that was part of the way they did it. And then that was when New York was never a slave state. But they did have indentured slaves, so we got to keep that straight. Before, in 1827 was when they abolished slavery in New York, way before the Civil War.
That's why
the Underground Railroad would come through here, and they helped many people. We have people like Floyd Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
Floyd Patterson went to school at Wiltwyck School, which was part of the estate of Oliver Hazard Payne, a huge estate, 2,400 acres, and he was one of the wealthiest men in the country at the time, and he had the distinction of owning the largest privately owned boat in the world, and he lived right in Ulster Park. West Park, actually, mm-hmm, and just down the road from us. And he was a very, very wealthy man. And it was called the Aphrodite. And if you ever want to do an interesting read, mm-hmm, is look up the Aphrodite. It was a 2,700 horsepower steam engine, three masts. It was opulent with gold and silver and ivory.
Beautiful.
And then he died in 1910. These are some of the stories that we have.
Okay.
He died in 1910, he died in 1914.
Okay.
1915. I correct myself because I say 1914 because what was going on in the world 1914?
Beginning of World War One.
World War One. So. Julian Breen, he was a guitarist, good guitarist, but Julian Burroughs, which was the son of John Burroughs, was the caretaker of this estate. Now, he had no heirs, and the heirs that he did have, you know, distant heirs, since they were wealthy and they didn't want nothing to do with it, so he donated this to the church, and Julian Burroughs was the caretaker. And was part of the Wiltwyck School, which was Eleanor Roosevelt's project that she did with wayward children from New York City that would come up here, and that was a reform school, if you would. Okay. But that was her thing to rehabilitate. Floyd Patterson went to that school. Really? And yes, and he was a graduate of that, and he lived in my town, and I got to know him personally. Gentleman, an incredible gentleman, yeah. Very big, but he was like a teddy bear. His hands were like ham hocks.
Yeah.
I mean, they were big. You shook hands with him, yeah. It was like your hand was engulfed in that. Oh. So that was the key. So there was a lot of people that came here. Now, you say, I talk about, you know, Henry Ford and Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison. These were people that came around in that area, and they literally hung around and fished and hunted and skinny dipped in the areas that we used to, that me and my kids used to go in the back of, yeah. Black Creek, and the areas, one of the earliest generating stations was right on Black Creek off of Villa Valley, just off of John Burroughs' property, where they would generate, and that was built by, there's just so much, yeah. It goes on and on.
I guess, and there's a hotbed of history there, just, you know, so much knowledge in it. Now, you mentioned, we got about 5 minutes, you mentioned the Work Street Bridge.
The Work?
2 minutes. About 2 minutes.
Okay, Work Street Bridge. Yeah. The connection for that was the longest bridge, and at the time, and it completed the road, and it's the only bridge exclusively owned by New York State.
Oh, my gosh.
And it connected. It made the connection between Albury and New York City. And it celebrated its, we did a documentary on that, and we're having another one that's being done. We have filmmakers that making a full-length documentary on that, and we showed it at our museum with the trailer of it. But that's it. I mean, we can go on and on. But I would say, come down and visit us. Go to our website. My name is on there. You can call me. I live right next door. Mm-hmm. So if you want to bring a group down, or if you want to stay, just give me a call. Go to our website, and you'll see it.
Good to know.
Well worth the trip.
Thank you. Well, thank you again, Lewis, for being on the show. Pleasure. Yeah, you're loaded with knowledge. I love that. It fills up the time very well. So... So thank you everybody for joining, and I think the next segment will be in December, if I'm not, or October, I believe. Well, Backtracks has 5 Fridays.
If I'm invited back, mm-hmm. I will talk about how the United Nations wanted to put a base in Esopus.
Okay, I have to make a note of that. I'll have you on again sometime.
That one there would be a good one. So thank you for inviting me, and I enjoyed doing that.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay. Everybody, thank you for listening. This is Backtracks in Time. Have a great day.